Yesterday, I spoke of and we explored together this interconnectedness and interbeing of cause and effect, of karma, if we use that word, or of dharmas, if we use that word. And we'll continue today, but from a slightly different perspective. Yasutani Roshi describes Buddha's teaching, or more fundamentally, the nature of this life, as ongoing change, non-self. Of course, that's a translation and paraphrasing in English. This is a fundamental point that is very difficult for us. Difficult because when we describe phenomena, dharmas, whether it's so-called physical or so-called mental, so-called inside, so-called outside, so-called people, we ascribe self. And we do it not necessarily by adding such a thing, but by adding liking, disliking, valuing, good, bad. We assume that there's a specific nature to the dharma, to the phenomena, to the whatever thing it is, in all sorts of realms. And that's the reason why we can become upset about some, reactively angry or happy or so on, based on what we impute to that dharma, the self-valuing that we add on, the propositions and assumptions that we build. If I feel this way, this means she did that, therefore it must be. She is, she's always, he's, and go on. No problem with the naming something, him, her, this type of thing, that type of thing, but we impute and believe the name makes it into a solid, fixed entity of some sort, separate entity, and therefore, based on that, we believe our story about it. In a sense, failing to see that it's arising, just as the arising of all phenomena is simply the coming together of cause and effect, of ongoing change, and that there is some that are more, quote, good, and some that are more, quote, bad. Joko somewhere says, as long as you are capable of being annoyed, you can be sure that something will annoy you. The thing is the dharma, the self that we attribute to that coming together of conditions, or the self that we attribute to ourself and what we should or shouldn't have to be with. And from that comes the reactive habits and the consequences in terms of stress and harm, suffering, and all the other ways that we create difficulties, because we only see the coming together of conditions, or if I use the fancy word, dharmas, in terms of the one-sidedness, the quote formness, if I use that sense, or the selfness. That's why this morning I reminded us that there's no throwaway moments. There's only throwaway if we decide that these are good and those are a throwaway, because those shouldn't have happened despite the fact that they happened now, or they're not valuable enough. Doesn't mean that you don't know the difference. If you're the Tenzo and you're preparing food, you do it in the kitchen, not in the bathroom. If you need to urinate, piss, you go to the bathroom. You don't go to the kitchen. Very simple. And yet, we need to see that kitchen and bathroom all have, if I use the word, backside, it really isn't a backside, but of this same true nature. Or if we say it the other way, the same emptiness, if I use that kind of word, absence of nature, of Dharma. Many ways that we express and clarify this, but in our sitting together, I bring it up not in terms of theory, but in terms of seeing how and what hinders us, gets in the way of us being just this moment, of being, if I say it a different way, this joyousness that we are. I'll come across it in a minute. In a sense, that's what makes it difficult for us to allow ourselves to be joyous in the midst of conditions that we attribute something to. We attribute, this is okay for me to be, this is not okay for me to be. And that's why the sutras will say some things like beings means nirvana. The very nature of being is nothing but nirvana. Or sometimes you've heard it said samsara is nirvana. Because we all always are nothing but manifesting this true suchness. Except when we're blinded by our beliefs about the self of the condition. The self meaning what we attribute to it. What we attribute to it. And the reason we do that is because of our skewing how we experience function be this moment because we believe our stories. We believe our stories, which is why what we're doing here is so simple. We're simply being present and getting to see our stories play out, and hopefully being able to open them up when they arise. Hopefully allowing ourselves to see their arising, passing, and their non-self, if I use that kind of word, nature. Not by trying to figure something out or going to look for it, but allowing self to drop away from. How? By being willing to notice and experience all the various ways our desires and reactions arise. Being willing to experience it rather than acting, reacting from it. See, and that's what we do in just sitting, in just being this breath. Not in order to get somewhere, in order to be as we are, because from the beginning we are this. Or say, if I say it a different way, from the beginning each dharma, each moment, each non-throwaway moment is nothing but this true nature that we are, that you are, each one of us. Of course, some of you will say, well, I have to get to a point when I da-da-da-da and have some experience of that. The quote, if we use the word experiencing of it, occurs in the if I say it, in the process of living moment, moment, moment. Then, according to circumstances and conditions, we get to taste this that we are. We get to be this harmony of being. When we say the verse of the robe, some say harmony of beings and some say harmony of being. In a way, you could say either way, because it's sure it's harmony of beings, but beings is being without the S. So I like to emphasize harmony of being, because not that it's somewhere else and something else, but because we so much take for granted beings and then, as I say, impute all sorts of things on to beings of like and dislike, of what I want and don't want. The sutra says, all dharmas being without nature means that being without any nature, they are all this quote preeminent true nature. Now, of course, such fancy words are a little too elaborate for us. A little too elaborate. And yet it's occasionally important to be able to say that. To say that just to remind us, as a counter to our tendency to say, oh yeah, she is, she shouldn't, he always, I can't stand, and so on and so forth. So, in a sense, we're continuing what I was talking about yesterday, of seeing the different streams of being that we join. Truthfully, all of us are joining this great stream of being that we think of as our life. In a sense, there's a little stream of being right here of us practicing sitting together. Some of us think, oh yeah, I'm just sitting by myself in the Zendo, but I've mentioned to a number of you at different times the importance to realize, the importance of realizing, of at least for a little bit suspending your usual habit of thinking that you are sitting yourself inside your bag of skin and bones with, you know, there's just other people in the Zendo. Truth of it is, you're sitting the whole Zendo. Even more, you're sitting this whole building and you're sitting the whole city of Champaign and the whole state of Illinois. And I won't go on because it's obvious. So there are many so-called beings that are all sitting with us. And yet, we each have our own sitting effort that we need to start with, which means this breath, in this body, in this moment. And yet, that is always non-self. That is always non-self. Therefore, it's only these conditions coming together right now. It is only these conditions coming together as manifesting this true nature, or as we say, this prajnaparamita, this wisdom beyond wisdom, which is empty of any self, empty of any separate, independent, permanent, fixed nature. And of course, even when we start using that word, we need to remember that empty is empty of emptiness. It's not an ascriptive word, it's just a pointer. It's not another proposition that will turn into a thing, into a dharma. Though we use it because it's skillful to say it sometimes. That's the point of no throwaway. That's the point of being just this moment. That's the point of seeing our practice in broad terms at the same time as seeing our practice in narrow, immediate terms. See, it's not either or. Though we want to turn it into either or for just that reason. Just like we want to turn things into things in either or terms. We want to blame or praise . We want to give value to our humiliation if someone says something that we feel humiliated by. I don't mean in the Zendo, I don't mean here, most of the time at least, except when we raise all sorts of imaginations by about what they must be meaning when they did that or didn't do that, when they said that. But certainly in our life, we are would rather think about it and do something with it rather than stay present and stay with it. Stay with it in the sense of being willing to experience it as a rising, passing moment. Not because it's going to pass, but because we are it. And it is not a fixed, separate, permanent dharma. Not because I say it. This is just an encouragement, but you have to do it. Not say, oh, it's not a fixed, permanent dharma, therefore it's okay. I'm going to feel this way, but it's okay. No, it's just to genuinely experience the way it is. And yet, because from the beginning, it's not our description of it. It's not our propositions about this is good and this is not good. And we only get to see it when we see those arise and practice with those. Because those arise almost habitually and almost automatically without us knowing, except that we believe them. And one of the aspects of Sesshin and ongoing practice, both in the Sesshin and other times, is to start seeing from these different perspectives, seeing exactly what we're believing and holding in the different ways, seeing what we're attaching to, seeing the name and the ascriptions, their nature that we're ascribing to it and believing about it, instead of seeing it simply as, if I use a term, as a conventional designation, but not as something that's truly so. In other words, it's fine to say it, to call it yucky, I don't like this, or whatever other way you want to say. But as long as we see that that is just the term we're using and not it, what it truly is, then yucky is emptiness. Emptiness is yucky. See? Did we do the Heart Sutra this morning? Yeah, right there. So in place of those, put in yuckiness. Disgustingness is empty. No disgusting. No wonderful. No praise. No humiliation. See? Or at least to notice how we believe those nature of the things. There's no stupid person, no spiteful person, no one who doesn't like me, despite the fact that they might say something critical of me. No one who's going to save me, despite the fact that they say, oh, here I have this wonderful for you. Or all the other ways that we believe our designation of others. That's this point of ongoing change, non-self. No fixed, permanent, separate self. It doesn't mean that you don't learn that, oh yeah, that person is waving a gun over there, I don't want to go on that block. Or maybe I need to do something else skillfully. We could make choices all the time. But at the same time, we have to see what the true nature that we're seeing, that this is exactly our life, including them saying and doing It's exactly our life, not someone else somewhere else. That they're nothing but the forces of cause and effect coming together and manifesting. And cause and effect can only manifest because from the beginning it's nothing but this empty nature, this true nature. I could use that word, I could say fundamental principle, I could say Buddha nature. See? Without fundamental nature, there wouldn't be any conditions arising, passing. It's because this true nature we are, that we are, that conditions arise and pass. And that the arising, passing of conditions are the very absence of any selfness that we could attribute, and therefore based on that our liking and disliking. Okay, this was I'm going a little bit in the direction of explaining too much here, and some of it this might seem a little abstract, but or even conceptual, but the point I want to make has to do with how and what we are doing as we sit, as we practice, whether in Sesshin or outside, but also what we're doing that gets us in trouble and how to practice when that habit of getting ourselves in trouble reactively appears, despite the fact that we know whatever we know, despite the fact that we say, oh yeah, I don't get bothered by that, and yet sitting still, all of a sudden we find ourselves cooking up all sorts of stories about self and other. Okay, I will stop now and we can continue exploring this and exploring what was brought up yesterday. If you want to change your position, feel free to. Yes, Mushin.
Although I'll say most of the time, I tend to not be aware of it, every once in a while I'm reminded that, what shall I say, the universe is constantly teaching me something. Something about myself and something about my life. And I had an experience of this on Thursday when I had my day all planned, what I was going to do, and get ready to come to Champaign. And not too long after I was at work, I had a few things I had to finish up at work, and everything was going to run really smoothly. And I get a call from a client. Our network's crashed.
Yes.
So my immediate reaction is, God damn, the universe is conspiring against me. what did I do in a previous life to deserve this?
You really have it. Conspiring against me.
Yeah, that's the way I felt. I know that I put it in those terms, except now, but that was the feeling that I had. So I'll be right over, and I'll, damn, and now what's going to happen? And so I go over there, and I'm looking at the file server, and I look up on the bulletin board of this office I'm in, and someone has a quote up on the bulletin board. And it's a quote by Captain Jack Sparrow.
Why don't you say who he is for those who don't know?
Pirates of the Caribbean, he's this crazy hiring guy.
Okay.
And the quote is, the problem isn't the problem. The problem is your attitude about the problem. And it was exactly what I needed
yes.
at that time. I thought, of course, what am I doing? Just uh-huh. fix the problem and move on.
Uh-huh.
And once I had...
We want to blame someone, even if we blame the universe.
Somebody's fault. Sometimes it's
not. That it's not going the way you planned it.
Yeah, I planned it. What's the deal here? And I just realized, okay, what's the problem? Let's deal with it. And in my slightly clarified perspective, I saw the solution immediately. And the day went as planned. But what if it hadn't? That's an interesting thought.
Mm-hmm. There's a famous, not famous, that's not the right word. There's a Chinese Yuan master from about the 8th or 9th century who uses the image of the mirror of, if we use the word emptiness, he says that it's the quote, impurities, meaning things not going the way we want them to, that show the clarity and purity of the mirror that we are, or the prajna that we are. It's because it can manifest those conditions according to circumstances that it's so. That those are always this true thusness or thatness or whatever, however you want to translate the Chinese or Sanskrit word. See? But yeah. Mm-hmm. But our willingness to notice when that comes up and to be supported by all sorts of reminders, even the movie quote, mm-hmm. is our ongoing practice. It's when at least we for a little bit can make more transparent or translucent the world is really screwed up or whatever we're saying, or at least notice the reaction coming in our voice and feeling and fear.
Yeah, sometimes we get so wrapped up in ourselves
uh-huh.
that we miss opportunities to uh-huh. to learn something, to open up to what's really going on.
To be able to allow what we don't like to arise, as well as, quote, what we like to arise. We don't want to allow what we don't like to arise, whether in our everyday life or our sitting. And yet it's because we sit in open, just sitting, that we can allow all sorts of conditions and circumstances arise as this moment. And we don't have to pick and choose which we want to focus on and which we want to, quote, throw away, close quote, which are too fearful that when they come up I have to think about something else or figure out, but I don't want to experience just being here, whether it's boredom or memory or fantasy or whatever, and yet not getting sucked into them. Yes. Musaki.
But the world is screwed up.
Is it?
Well, on one level, yes. There's all kinds of things happening in the world.
Yeah, that's right. Humans harm and suffer. Yes. Right. That's not screwed up. That's not screwed up. That's just cause and effect.
Oh, okay.
So... But it's able to manifest that way because of this true nature that it is. Therefore, conditions can manifest that way. And that also gives us the possibility to not be trapped by those conditions, because we can also release and let go of them. So we're not trapped and bound by those forces. That's the aspect of practice, that we can be open and loving, or if you want to use other words, be compassionate, despite our reactive habit of wanting to go, how could he say that? And yet we can experience that in being present, in being just this moment. We could experience it and yet not react out of it. See, that's the possibilities that we all have. So it's not that it's screwed up. It's simply manifesting cause and effect. It's like if you pile up snowballs and then push them down a hill, they're going to roll down the hill and maybe hit things and maybe knock things over and etc., etc. That's just cause and effect. And we are living all sorts of cause and effect, some of which we humans, quote, understand and figure out, and some, many of which, most of which, we don't. Except as we see them manifesting, we have the opportunity seeing what's skillful and appropriate here now for me. For me by myself, for me with others, for me, and we make choices. That's, I don't, you know, you're right. Caught in self-centered dream, we do all sorts of harm and suffering to ourselves and others, which is, of course, all doing to ourselves, and it's all doing to others. Yeah? That's why we practice. That's why I said there's no throwaway breaths, no throwaway moments. Therefore, when you wash a dish, that's washing the whole universe. When you flush the toilet, that's taking care of the whole universe. And it's pulling up your own pants. That's our practice. I don't remember the exact quote, but I remember there's a quote where Joshu says, Chan Master Joshu says in response to something, isn't it a shame? I don't think he said the word shame. Isn't it something that a great Zen master like me has to go piss for myself? I quoted this, I don't remember when, some sesshin in the last few years. Yeah. That's taking care of the whole universe. See, it really is. That's why our practice is moment, moment, wholeheartedly doing our best this moment. See? That's why our session begins when the first thought of session arises. Actually, it's when the first breath, when we are born. That's the beginning of our life practice. That's why it's life practice. And we're subject to all sorts of cause and effect, which is nothing but self-centered dream and attachments and delusions. And yet, we can be beyond them, even this moment. They arise as nothing but the manifestation of this true nature that we are, giving us the opportunity to allow them to arise and pass. Yes. Right.
I have two, but I'll settle for one.
Good. Settle for one. Make it precise.
I don't know your exact terminology, but something about insight into the arising of desires. Something you said along that lines. And, you know, maybe in meditation we would have some insight into it. I don't have any insight into it. They arise. I can watch it arise, and it arises. Uh-huh. And it's arising out of a void. It's just arising.
You don't need insight into its arising. All what you need, or what I would encourage, is the willingness to experience the body-mind moment without having to act it out, without having to build on it. Insight is fine when it occurs, but it's sometimes a booby prize because we look for it and it becomes something cognitive that we want to think about and play with. It's not important. It's how we live, if I use the word harmoniously, with all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas that we encounter from morning to night. And that's all who we encounter. We only encounter Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. No one else in this realm that we encounter. Though they might not know it, and we might not know it, but that's secondary. That's not important. Except to the extent that us not knowing it keeps us blinded and doing things that are harmful, and also keeps us from allowing them to experience their own life as it truly is. If we can, that's why, as I said yesterday, beings are numberless, I vow to liberate them, is the first of the four great vows. Because that's our practice. Liberating all the beings we encounter, which are nothing but our own life. And yet, our innumerable desires are our opportunities to liberate those desires and to liberate those beings, or not act out on them in the harmful and stressful, suffering ways that we might otherwise. Or what Musekhi said, what people do to each other and to other beings.
Isn't that what Shakyamuni Buddha said when he saw the morning star? In fact, he said, I have liberated all beings.
No, I and all beings have together attained the way, not I have liberated all beings.
What's the difference?
Because I have liberated is a way of saying it as if I did something to them. That isn't a quote, but you could. But of course, you could translate. You'd be translating Sanskrit or Pali or Chinese, and people take all sorts of liberties. But I and all beings together have attained the way. That's different than saying I have liberated all beings. Or I and all beings are the wisdom and perfection of the Buddha. Again, but there's a caveat. But because of delusion and attachment, they suffer harm. That's the caveat that's handed on. Not that we have to be stuck in delusion and attachment, but that's manifests, and that's our opportunity, or that's what we keep rolling down the hill and then complaining why it's gaining speed.
I guess the point I see there is that the way we say we vow to liberate all beings, and the way we do that is by doing our practice, by putting in our effort for our practice. Because we'll never meet all beings.
Right here. All beings. Right here. All beings. If you don't see that, then you're back in believing dharmas as separate entities. That's why, as I said, the dish you wash, the mouthful you chew, is the whole universe. Some people encourage us to practice when you chew a piece of apple, you should also be attentive to the sunlight that grew the apple. You should be able to taste the sunlight and the rain and the insects and the pollinators and the leaves and the tree in that apple, because they truly are there. That's the interbeingness of it. Not as a mental concept, but in the process of just being the chewing apple. The apple chewing you.
I'm sorry for belaboring this, but what I'm saying is, why isn't that this practice right here, all beings?
That's fine.
That's what I'm saying.
Good.
Not very well, apparently.
I don't remember what you said before.
I don't either.
Good.
Good thing.
Joyce.
I am all beings.
Yeah. Saying it is one thing. It's doing it when the beings we encounter are saying and doing things that we, quote, don't like, that we feel humiliated by, or, and then seeing what's skillful and appropriate. Sometimes they don't even know what they're doing, but we imply something about them. See, that's why I encourage people, and I've said it many times, that our practice is when we're in the line at the grocery store or elsewhere to see what we're doing, what we're believing about those in front of us, how they're acting, how we're with the cashier, or in various other places. See, that's always our practice. That's why our practice is no throwaway moments. A practice of no throwaway moments. That doesn't mean that you don't do different things in different places. For instance, if you are going to a symphony hall to either play on stage or be in the audience, there's some people dress in certain ways according to the conditions. Whereas when, so let's say if you wore a suit or a tuxedo or whatever, for one of those, and then you went for a late night run to get pizza at Papa John's, you wouldn't want to wear a tux and tails. I mean, you could, but it would be a little, people would look at you and think it was a little out of strange, except if they thought you were coming after having been at the symphony hall. And if you're going to go dig up the garden, you definitely want to leave the tux and tails or gown somewhere else and put something else on. Or if we're going to go out and shovel the snow this evening during break, or so. Anyone else? I've talked a lot, so this is not. Let's see. Let's give others a chance if someone has something to say. Nick. But you have to speak up louder.
During this practice, one can become quite aware of just how much we struggle against conditioned responses.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and some of these responses that we have, that I have, are very deeply ingrained.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one thing to notice that response, that reaction. Sometimes it feels like it's a completely different thing to sort of override that response or to go beyond it. You know, I might notice in a situation I'm really angry at this person, how dare they say that? But to take that extra step, go beyond and so to speak, do what's appropriate, sometimes feels like, you know, fingernails on a chalkboard. It's like something very unnatural and something very, like you have to fight against it.
Right.
And it doesn't feel at all natural. Like,
you're right. It doesn't feel natural from the point of view of self-centeredness. We don't want to experience the present moment of I don't know what, yuckiness of discomfort. And yet, given that that's this present moment, it's in experiencing it that we get to truly experience this true nature we are, and then manifest it in actions, as opposed to living out of the reactive habit. And it's in doing this over and over as it arises in our life, as best we can, that the true joy that our life is ours. You're right. We don't want to do it. I don't want to do it. And I is from the point of view of self-centeredness, caught in self-centered dream. We say that not because it's, quote, bad or good, but just because that's the cause and effect habit. That's the cause and effect conditions that are manifesting now. That's where most of us unfortunately come from, despite the fact that it's not our life, despite the fact that our life is perfect and whole as it is. We don't believe it with, if I'll say it, every fiber of our being that we're used to is not believing it, but instead believing something else and acting on those something else beliefs to be, you know, addicted to self, if I use that kind of word. It just seems natural.
Would it be appropriate to say then that maybe part of what we do in practice is to break down that conditioning?
I don't want to say we break down the conditioning, but the practice allows the conditioning to, if you want to say break down, I like to say become transparent and to drop away. We can say that. Or to, you know, you probably know the traditional Zen phrase of body, mind, dropping away that Dogen uses and others use. Or forgetting self. That's what he's talking about. Forgetting self. Not getting rid of self. Not breaking down self. But forgetting self. So self could be there. But it's not how we look at the world and how we experience this life. Because that's the way we often tend to experience life, through the lens of self. And therefore, through the lens of what am I going to do to make sure self gets or doesn't get. That's why I started this talk with talking of using that phrase, non-self. So yeah. But not break down, because then it becomes a fight and it becomes a tremendously difficult. And it's really just moment by moment doing the simplest of being as we are. Being this moment. See? As we are realized. From the beginning, practice is in realization, or is the awakened state. So it's like we walk out in the snow, and little by little, as we walk along, we become completely covered and drenched through with snow. Not because we have to take the snow from the ground and pile it up on us, but because we're living in this true nature life, that little by little it becomes clear to us. And then at some point, we taste it. We experience it for ourselves in various ways. See, that's why it's only this moment that we make the effort of being open, loving, however that effort is appropriate and skillful. Don't have to break down anything else or take care of anything else. Just take care of this breath. That's why no throwaway breath, no throwaway moment. That's all. So it's easy. Just have to do one moment at a time. Just one moment. We're all capable of it. Everyone's capable of it. One moment, one moment. That's all. Everything else is a fiction and a story that we either make trouble with or support ourselves and encourage ourselves with. Yes, Belinda. Koshi.
I'd like to go back to Ed's call on Thursday. It's a call from the universe. And I've learned to pay attention to those calls from the universe and not get angry. I've had enough little incidents where if I had been angry and tried to get there in time, I would have been in the accident that was happening down the road. And so it's just those little, you know, wake up moments. So I've just learned to, where's the message? And Ed found the message on the bulletin board.
And about paying attention.
And sometimes those calls come from, you know, the outside, and sometimes they come from when we notice ourselves beating ourselves up about this or that. That I could have, should have, he should have, she could have, if only, etc., etc. Sometimes about things recent, sometimes about things long past that we had forgotten, and all of a sudden appears in this functioning of our life memory. And sometimes they're all fantasies. And people can beat themselves up about fantasies, as we know. And sometimes beat others up about fantasies. And as we can see, you know, whether things like road rage or otherwise. But I've been talking too much. So unless someone has something they feel has to be brought up, we can end. Thank you. Let us continue to sit and practice.
Copyright 2013, LU Genmyo Smith.